Dang, Mark Marquez has now won 6 in a row. I've now run out of Balatro references for other hand types. This is a problem. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. The term flush five just doesn't quite hit the same, unfortunately. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 609 of Motorsport 101. No, it's not a nice edition. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join me as ever. And we have another MotoGP round to bring you because his bikes is back. After a three-week summer vacation, we are back in business for MotoGP for the second half of the 2025 season. And round 13 had us back at familiar ground if you're an F1 fan. It's the Red Bull Ring. And finally, after a dozen attempts nearly, Marc Marquez has a win in Austria. That's how you know it's truly over at this point, quite frankly. So, here to break down the inevitable once again, as ever, we have Mr. RJ O'Connell. How was your travels last week, my friend?
So much better in America this time out. I could actually breathe the outside air. Saturday being a rainout was not great. Everything else was good. I will be glad to see the end of driving from Fond du Lac, Wisconsin to Road America and back for two weekends. Otherwise, I enjoyed being there. More travels along the way. I would like to throw this over now to somebody who has been grinding a lot when it comes to the new Battlefield beta, is Cam Buckley.
Sweating bullets. You know, it's like MotoGP never even left. It comes back, and who do you think won? It's 2025 on a red bike. This season is quickly turning into a waste of everyone's time. Except me! This is great!
I'm not going to lie, I'm deeply enjoying the weekly exhibition of how does Marc Marquez win this week. I know some people can't stand that, but I don't care.
He was on hard mode this week. He crashed in qualifying.
Crashed in qualifying, had to start fourth, didn't have it entirely his own way, had to get to lap 20 before he was in the lead. Damn, he had to actually work for this one. In the words I say on this podcast quite often, oh, that brother's starving, as they say. Also, quick note, thanks to everybody who's gone out of their way to wish me a happy birthday. Much appreciated.
Happy birthday, Dre!
Thank you. As RJ's alluded to in the past, it's the 15th anniversary of my 18th birthday. So thanks to everyone for all their birthday wishes. I do really appreciate that.
I would call it hitting the Big Max Verstappen, but this is a biking podcast, so actually it's hitting the Marco Melandri.
I will take that, because it gave me an excuse on every social media platform I have to share that power slide from Phillip Island. The greatest highlight in MotoGP history.
Look, there are two biking clips I will always repost when I see them. Chiannari's insane wet lap from like 2008.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
And that power slide while peace symboling.
Yes.
Elite content.
Yes, absolutely. There will be no exceptions. Those will be shared no matter what. So, yes, thank you to everybody for all the kind words and the well wishes. I do really appreciate that. I am now officially Marco Melandri years young. All I need now is a catwalk model, and then we're all sorted.
There you go.
You know, anyone in West London, call me.
Oh, that brother's starving.
Very much so in some instances. Places you can find us real quick. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you want to follow us personally on Blue Sky, you can at Dre Harrison, at cbuckley917, and at rjoconnell.bsky.social. If you want to catch more of our video highlights, you can on our Instagram page, motorsport101pod. You can follow me personally as well at dreharrison101 if you want to catch some of those as well. You are also on TikTok at m101_podcast. And, well, all of our Whitman blogs as well are on the website, motorsport101.com. And if you really, really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content, including... You got half of the DRR early this week as well. I was extra generous. Happy birthday from me to you guys. I gave you a gift. Some early words on the DRR about Casey Stoner, which we'll talk about a little bit later on in the podcast. So do check that out. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded as well. As Jason is doing, as Ghost Raptor is doing. Thank you so much, as Vic is there as well. Thanks, guys, for supporting the show as ever. Much appreciated. Right, without further ado, after this quick musical interlude, let's talk MotoGP's Austrian Grand Prix.
You mean we're not talking about the start of the Premier League season? Apologies.
We're going to stop this flame. I will never let you go.
No, I think this flame has completely stopped in your instance. The Red Devils is the Red Devils. But regardless, I digress. After 10 attempts and a penchant for being beat to the line by a Ducati on many of those occasions, Marc Marquez finally claimed victory at the Red Bull Ring in Austria on a Ducati. He had to earn it, though, after having to start from fourth on the grid, trailing Aprilia's Marco Bezzecchi for over half the race. In the closing stages, Marquez was able to get in front of Bez, only to have to stay alert for the threat of Fermin Aldeguer, who came from ninth on the grid to get up to second, finishing just a second behind Mark for his best MotoGP finish of his rookie campaign. Notes here, Marc Marquez is still positively him. We were away for a bit, but his bikes is back.
I love that the first thing he said to the world's media after winning his sixth race in a row, first time he's done that in 11 years, was, thankfully you guys never have to ask me about winning in Austria ever again. I think he was kind of glad he got that monkey off his back. He joked going into the weekend that every time I was beaten by a red bike, now I'm on the red bike. Let's see what happens now.
It ain't fun when the rabbits got the gun.
Exactly. I don't want to say it's boring talking about how brilliant Marc Marquez is, but it was just another perfectly executed and managed race once again. He got an excellent start, made early ground, he swept Pecco Bagnaia to one side early on, and then he just did what he's done so many times, just scout what Bezzecchi's pace was, stay with him, tried an earlier attack around mid-distance, didn't quite work, so Mark played it smart, he backed off a little bit, saved his front tire, had another go with 9 laps to go, made it stick this time round, and well... Some say that, not to borrow Top Gear's The Stig here, but some say that Fermin Aldeguer kind of prompted Mark to get his head back in the game. I don't fully believe it because I've seen the lap times. There was only about a tenth and a half in decrease in pace. So, you know, I think it sounds cooler to say, well, I was, you know, I think if you saw it, Cam, on Reddit, I think Mark admitted that he had phoned it in a little bit with like 4 to go. He kind of dozed off at the front and lost concentration because he was just trying to win and go in as slowly as possible. And as soon as he saw Aldeguer's name on the board, he was like, okay, hammer time.
Back to business. Yeah, it's almost concerning where like Mark has, one of the signatures of his racing this year has been he's had so much late race pace that he actually like, it's like he leaves too much in hand and he has to scare himself by nearly crashing or nearly getting beaten into getting his head back on his shoulders. But yeah, Aldeguer rode a great race, got it to about a little over a second and kind of stayed there.
He was within about 0.9 in the last 2 or 3 laps, but I think Mark always had it in hand in terms of pace. But it was nice to get a little scare for a second there, going, oh, hang on a minute, this is new.
A fight.
A fight. The nearest Aldeguer's been to the front of a MotoGP race since his Top Flight career started. And look, this has been the insurance policy for Ducati for quite some time now. In case they ever got gutted or their bike wasn't suddenly as good, they had Fermin Aldeguer on this 4-year agreement as almost like Ducati's vanity project, where it's just like, well, we've got Marc Marquez, we've got Pecco Bagnaia. You know, Alex has turned out to be great this year. That's a nice bonus. You know, DJ Antonio is on the 25 for extra development. But hey, we've got Fermín Aldeguer too. We've got another young hotshot who could also be really, really good.
We get it. Stop running up the score.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the break glass in case of emergency option is like a 19-year-old hotshot who won at 1.1 four Moto 2 races in a row. Just in case.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, when Aldeguer is hot, he is hotter than fish grease. And he's been a little up and down this year, as he was in Moto 2. But the up has been excellent. Low key, Scotty nomination for that pass of the chicane.
Oh, the one on Acosta was filthy.
Diabolical. Broke his ankles.
Oh, the crossover into the second half of the chicane. Oh, that was nasty work. You don't do that to Pedro Acosta. Like, holy. Yeah,
bullied him off the track, too.
Yeah, and just... Yeah,
he likes those. He did that against Morbidelli a couple races ago as well. He likes that that really sudden change of direction type pass. But yeah, I mean, we're beating a dead horse. We are, in the words of Alucard, fucking the fear turkey. Marc Marquez. there is nothing in terms of competitive prospect this year. It is merely a question of when. How much so? Well, he has scored more points in the last six races than Pecco Bagnaia has all season, in that he has not dropped a point in six races.
232 out of the last 232. Yeah, 12 races in a row if you include the sprints. He has been perfect on track in races since Aragon back in June.
The phrase is different gravy.
Different gravy.
The only person I think is even in his postcode in terms of like pound for town talent is Marco Bezzecchi. Look, I was never wrong when I started hashtag why not Bez. I was simply early.
You were right on time. He was brilliant in 2023. Like, what we're seeing now is 23 Marco Bezzecchi making a resurgence. Like, this is like, people forget 2023 Marco Bezzecchi on a GP22 at the time was on his day unstoppable. Like, the funny thing about Bez, I love this fact, he's won four Moto GP races. They've been by, all of them have been by at least 3 seconds.
There is no one more on. And that's that's, I think, is the problem. The problem when looking across at Marquez, who, as we know and have known for years, he kind of just makes it work, whether things are perfect or not. And then there's a lot of riders in this field that is, we would term the Goldilocks riders, like Pecco, like Bez. When they are on, when everything is good, they are exceptionally fast. And right now, Aprilia seems to have cracked the code with setting up the RSGP this year. That heavily revised bike gave him a little trouble first couple races, but the potential was there. And he is making use of all of it. He's been cleanly the second best guy in the field for a month or two.
Since Silverstone. You know, his Aragon was a bit dodgy, Mugello not quite there, but certainly since Assen, he has been the number two man in this championship. 100%. And Aprilia's got something here.
The only Aprilia, the only not Ducati in the postcode of the top three.
Yeah, consistently, like,
he's not that far behind Pecco in the stands. Only 45 points.
Yeah, you actually, 43 actually. Looking at my scoreboard. Yeah, I was going to say, like, it's... Bez has been the clear number two man in the standings since probably Silverstone, really. And that was a race he won. He maybe could have still won that even if Quartararo didn't have the ride height device failure. He was chipping away at Fabio's gap. It was going to be tight on that one, I think, if that race had played out to its natural conclusion. But Bez is on fire. And you know what? Fair play to Aprilia. They've got something here. They are not far away. I mean, there is no doubt about it. We've consistently seen over the last 2 months that Bez is right there with Ducati. And if it's not for the extra quality that Marc Marquez brings to the table, Bez might have three or four wins this season by now. It's only Marc and his superhuman best that is really consistently better than Bezzecchi right now. The Aprilia, as Cam alluded to, has had its fair share of problems, mostly stability. They've lost some of that stability on corner entry.
It was a swing from them. It was a bet, like, in order to create a bike that was better at that was better everywhere, they've had to sacrifice a little bit of the stability and grip, just the raw grip that their bike could generate, because oftentimes it would actually give them trouble. It would either chatter the rear tire, or it would just make the bike very numb at the limit. And in making it a little bit more of an all-rounder, they now, I would say, cleanly have the second-best bike in the field, although KTM, with a big upgrade package this weekend, look better as well.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing they're lacking is just that big, beautiful, decimodromic valve power that the Ducati has, because even now in a straight line, they just don't have it on the Ducati. But yeah, a lot of other places, if they're not there, they're very, very close.
I think we are genuinely just starting to see the convergence of the field on Ducati in general. Ducati's still got enough bullets in the chamber and enough outright talent with Marc, Alex. But Pecco's not been dreadful. We'll get to him in a minute. He's not been dreadful this season. He's still like regularly in the top three. There's no doubt about that. They've got enough bullets in the chamber where they can still win. They have the resources and assets. But as mentioned, Aprilia's right there with them now. KTM wasn't a million miles away the last couple of rounds at Brno or here either. I think the field is starting to converge. I think Ducati might still have the best bike, but I don't think it's by a huge margin anymore.
It's not last year where they could just take every weekend off and just blow the field away, top five lockout, not even trying.
Yeah, Mark's got to be at 100% now to beat Bezzecchi straight up. Because in Assen, he had to be perfect. He was. And here again, you know, Brno, he had a bit more in hand. You know, maybe a couple attempts, you know, a lap here and there. Again, Austria. Mark had to work hard for this one. This was not a straightforward win for Marc Marquez. He had to work quite hard to get that gap at the end, and only won by a second over Aldegar. Bez, I think, just gave up with about five to go because he had nothing to play for, really, in terms of raw speed.
I think it was a little bit. I mean, Ducati, even when they were bad, were good here. But over the course of the race, they just kind of shot the field to pieces, those two on raw speed.
And this is a track that Aprilia is not meant to be good at. This is, on paper, Aprilia is meant to suck around here. And they were comfortably the second best bike on display.
Really impressive stuff. They reset the book with this bike to try and make it more of an all-rounder. And it took them a couple races for them to figure out the scale of the change that they made. But it's working. Visibly working. You see it in the results on track. For one of their bikes, at least.
I want to see Jorge Martin 100% on this thing.
It's going to be exciting. I mean, like, again, if Brno gave us any indication, if he's seventh with on a bike he's had less than 500 kilometers running on, again, Austria is not quite as rider friendly as Brno is. Austria is quite a physical beast, and Martin will be the first guy to admit he's not at full race fitness. I guess maybe full race sharpness might be the better way of describing it.
Just hope I don't have to wait until 2026 to see it.
I don't think you have to. I think he will only get better as he just gets more. He needs track time. It really is as simple as that. He just needs more time, because we talked about it on the show before. Gavin Emmett on TNT reckoned he's short about 5,000 kilometers of running compared to the other major players in the field. That's a full season's worth of Grand Prix.
I mean, last year it took Mark the better part of probably two-thirds of the season to truly feel comfortable on the Ducati, and then kind of quit the learning phase and start the making lap time phase.
Mm-hmm.
And Martin is, what, four races in, and two of those were not races.
Yeah. You know, he will get there. I have no doubt in my mind he will get there. And look, in qualifying, he was only, what, in Q1, a tenth and a half behind Bez. You know, it's like he's not a million miles away. It's the race pace.
It's the race pace, and that comes with learning and track time.
It'll come for Martin. I have no doubt in my mind about that. It's just going to be a matter of when rather than if. I don't think there's any question marks about Jorge Martin's outright speed as a rider. That's the one thing that's never been in question with Jorge Martin. He will figure this out. I have every confidence in that. So, yeah. To be fair, Bannerton Park's next, and everybody is learning that place. So if there's actually one place where Martin might actually be a little bit better, it might be Bannerton, where everybody's learning that track. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
By the way, Grassini recreating the Linkin Park album cover for Bannerton Park to hype it up, and then
10 out of 10.
Verifying its realness, it's not AI slopness, with the photo of them doing it. I mean, that's just good. That's just good stuff.
In the same way they did it with Alex Marquez's bare ass cheek earlier this season, that was...
you can't AI generate that.
Commitment. If nothing else.
Speaking of bare ass cheeks, unfortunately, it was a very difficult weekend for Pekka Bagnaia. Again, the two-time champion had claims of a dud rear tire that put him out of the sprint after just 5 laps. And then in the Grand Prix, was bullied down to 8th place, having been as high as 2nd. And he told the press he was, quote, running out of patience for Ducati to give him answers for his poor pace. Kim? What do you think is going on with Pekka? You had a theory about this.
I have a theory, and it's beyond just he's fucked, although I do think that is a major component of it. Look, the man is a multi-time world champion, and this season has been struggle-licious. Because even if Marquez was going to come in and beat him black and blue, as I thought he would anyway, you'd still want him to at least be second best Ducati.
Right.
Or third best Ducati, because Alex Marquez has been phenomenal this year until really the last 2 months. There's times where he is fourth or fifth best Ducati, and that is deeply, deeply concerning. The points total isn't that far away from where he's tracked in the past couple years. The difference is that was a whole lot of winning and then occasionally Bozo genieing the bike up the road.
He hasn't been anywhere.
He's not crashing this year, but he also has no pace. The one time he really showed that prodigious Pecco pace was in Mugello, and it took half a race for him to shoot his tires to pieces, and Mark just rode right around him and took off. I think people deeply underestimate how much he and Jorge Martin, and this applies to Martin as well, how much those two would pore over each other's data and use each other to beat each other. Because while they don't have the same riding style, Martin a little bit more flair, a little bit more out of control, Pecco a little bit more, you know, geometric with the way he rides the bike, it was compatible. And you could pore over each other's data and you could use the other guy to beat the other guy, as he did 2 years ago and as Martin did last year. Dre, what's the Cal Crutchlow line about Mark Marquez's data?
I can completely understand what he's doing. It's impossible to actually replicate.
Yeah, I understand exactly what he's doing. I just can't do it.
Yeah.
Like, and that has been a problem. when we talk about Mark Marquez as one of the last aliens, he really is in every sense, because he just rides a bike like a fucking weirdo. And you can see that in the way that he rides that bike. And Pecco has no data across from him. And he has no data from Pramac, because what use is Pramac data now that they've got Yamahas? They're not going to share that across.
And I'd also, to add on top of that from Cam, if there's one thing I've learned from interviews and talking to people around him, Pecco is a bit of a Goldilocks rider. He is very sensitive to feedback when it comes to how his Ducati rides. And let's not forget, this GP25 was a bit of a troublesome bastard in development. This was not a straightforward development path. If it wasn't for Ducati coming off the back of a season where they completely dominated the field, we'd probably say on paper it was a rough off-season, in the sense of they built a GP25, their two main riders didn't like it, and they had to put together this Frankenstein's monster.
How do you improve on perfection? As it turns out, you really can't. And what they've got right now, like, Mark is on the GP25 frame and some of the engine and the aero, and Pecco has more or less retained the kind of hybrid bike that they started off the year with. And depending on who you ask in the Ducati garage, they're either exactly the same or a little bit different or completely different.
Yeah.
The truth on that is probably somewhere in the murky middle.
Like with Red Bull in Formula One, there is one man that can fully extract the performance of that Ducati. Unfortunately, he's not that useful to someone like Pecco Bagnaia because, as Cam alluded to, they have completely different riding styles. They ride the bike in a completely different way. When I wrote about this on the DRR on the website that I wrote up, I described it as looking at a wall and applying to break it in two different ways. Pecco Bagnaia is a pickaxe. He's very sensitive to feedback. He likes things a certain way. He's precision. He's very good at picking at a particular spot and then doing his damage that way. Death by a thousand cuts. He's very smooth, very precise, very proficient. Marc Marquez is a sledgehammer. He will blunt force trauma, physically wrestle a bike into extracting as much performance as possible. Both ways can be just as effective at breaking down a wall, but in the context of what the Ducati GP25 is right now, Marquez is just way more effective at it.
He is going to go. His riding style is climbing on the bike and going, "Let me tell you something."
Right.
He will abuse 110% out of any motorcycle he throws his leg over, and as long as he doesn't have to go to, like, 120%, like he did probably the last 2 years on Honda, where it just was not sustainable. And we saw that come to a head at the Sachsenring 2 years ago. He not only is going to win, he's probably going to blow the field away doing it, because as long as he doesn't crash, he's just going to get more lap time that way.
It almost
cost him his career.
He's got 2 free temps on the field because he's also brilliant at managing the tires and having that incredible throttle control that means he doesn't have to spin up his front or rears. And that's the one element of Marquez's game this year that no one in the field has been able to crack. The back half of a race, Marc Marquez has been completely unstoppable. And that's probably the biggest reason why he's won 9 Grand Prix so far this season out of the 13 that we've had. I feel bad for Pecco to a degree because this weekend was not fully on him. Like we said on Saturday, he said everything but it was a dud rear tire. And if he's saying that, I'm inclined to believe him. We've had more than enough evidence over the last few years from Michelin that occasionally they will just have a bad batch and that someone will just have a dud rear that will not work properly. I mean, look, Bagnaia came into the box after 5 laps, and we saw him later on in the sprint replicate the Monca reaction of him losing control on the wheel.
Yeah, Monca steer on handlebars. The death wobble at 20 miles per hour on a MotoGP bike is not good.
It's like he was trying to do every white person's drunken Macarena in the middle of Ibiza. It was not pretty out there, let me tell you. It's every dad that's had one too many at a wedding. It was bad. The Grand Prix, that was the first, I think, after the race in particular, that was the first, in my opinion, real crack between Pecco Bagnaia and Ducati, who, let's not forget, he's been on Ducati his entire MotoGP career since he debuted in 2019. This is year 6 of him, 7 actually, at Ducati, year 6 at the factory team. He did a year at Pramac when he debuted in 2019. That's the first time that he's straight up said publicly, "Ducati, I need answers, because this is getting ridiculous." Cam can claim this one all he wants, and I think even Cam would agree with me here. There is no way on earth Pecco Bagnaia is 200 points worse than Marquez. No shot. That man's won 30 MotoGP races. I think he's a large sum
behind, but not 200. Not in a million years.
No.
Because at minimum, he really should be second or third in the championship with, like, a lot of margin. He's only 45 points ahead of Bez, and frankly, Bez took a month and a half to get going this year.
Yeah, Bez was okay, but he had a rough patch in, like, around Qatar, Spain, France were all bad weekends. Weekends are where we are, he didn't get very many points at all. And Bagnaia, I mean, he hasn't had any, like, real... Like, Silverstone's the only crash he's had in a Grand Prix this year that was of his own making. Like, in fairness to Pecco, the Bozo shit has largely gone away.
Like, so, if he has cut down on the Bozo gene, if he has kept the bike upright, has the continuity with the team, and we all agree that he's not 200 points worse than Marc Marquez, why is he 200 points worse than Marc Marquez? Why are we even entertaining the slim, faint rumors that he might leave Ducati and Alex Marquez might take his place?
Because the reason why Pecco is 200 points back is because Mark has suffocated the field to the point where a bad day for Marquez, he's still got a second or third and a sprint win in him. Remember, he's won 12 out of 13 sprints this season. Pecco's race points is actually not that bad. He's about the same as Alex Marquez in Grand Prix this year. It's the sprints that have killed him, relatively speaking. One, because Mark has been virtually perfect in sprints this year. He's won 12 out of 13, six in a row in sprint forms as well. And Bagnaia's struggles are made worse because the sprint fuel tank throws off the weight distribution of the bike. And as I said before, Bagnaia is a Goldilocks rider. You throw him off his balance, he loses all confidence. That's a big element as to why Pecco has struggled. Arguably, the sprints cost him 2024 against Martin. He was 45 points worse than Martin on Saturday, and that's what cost him his championship. It's a similar case here. Of course, the Grand Prix are the Grand Prix, and Mark has just been ridiculous in race trip.
It's the problem. Marc Marquez having the worst day of the year, he crashes. Marc Marquez having a bad day, he finishes first. Marc Marquez right. having a good day, he finishes first by a lot. If Pecco is having a good day, he's probably competing for the win. And when he's having a bad day, he's bottom half of the top 10.
Cam,
that's just not sustainable.
Cam, to your point about Marc Marquez, what is that line that Chris told us about another dominant Spanish athlete?
Well, this is like 10 times worse. What do you do against that kind of consistency? How do you win a championship against it? You don't. It's as simple as that. And, well, you can't get more consistent than I'm just going to win and score maximum points every week. I mean, Mark in 2019 on a Honda that we knew had major, major rideability problems. His worst finish was second. His one DNF, his engine broke.
And to put it into perspective, after the sprint race on Saturday, Marc Marquez had 1 point more than he had in the entirety of his 2024 season with Gresini. After 12.5 weekends.
The season has confirmed one thing more than anything else. If the GP23 was legitimately that 3 and some change tenths behind the 24, well, with Marquez with that in his pocket, it has played out exactly like giving him 3 and some change tenths on the field.
Yeah.
Which only makes the season last year look even more impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, you can't factor in Alex having a breakout season, but even like Alex has had a horrible summer and he is still up on Pecco.
Yeah. It's gotten to the point where let's say if you did, and there's no real concrete evidence they would do this, but if you did flip Pecco and Alex and put Alex on a factory bike, yes, you get what Repsol Honda should have been in 2020. I don't think you solve the problem of the second factory Ducati being so much further off than the first one.
And Alex would be the first person to admit he can't do what Mark's doing on that machine. Like, it's not like Alex is saying, if only I had a 25, I'd be beating this dude's ass. No, even
There's people in the garage who would tell you you'd rather be on a 24.
Yeah. Like, there are a lot of people that swear that the rideability of the 24 is worth whatever performance deficiency the 25 has by comparison, because if a rider's more comfortable, chances are they're going to go a bit quicker. The fuming element of it. Something we can't evaluate.
How do you beat someone who is comfortable with having a bike doing anything and up to and including trying to kill him?
You don't.
I don't know. Should we ask Casey Stoner about that? Because he had a lot of words to say on this.
Oh,
also
boy.
Worth noting that it came out in the past week as well. It makes that last season with Mark. He was riding literally. And that word is overused a smidge. Literally for free.
His personal sponsors paid for the whole thing. Win and podium bonuses included. Like, he left, from what I was told by Toby Moody, 18 million euros on the table in the last year of his Honda contract to go to Gresini for zero just to prove he could win again. Damn. This man doesn't give a shit about the money. Working. He's here to win. Yeah. He's here to win. Safe to say he's here to win.
This was the man that got a 9-figure contract when he was at Honda. Just to put that out here. Okay.
And they underpaid him.
we have a couple of things to go over designers. That happened at the weekend. MotoGP introduced stability control to its standardized ECU packages. Huh? It's been in development for the last 3 years. It's been brought on as a safety measure to help prevent high side crashes. This also came alongside Casey Stoner visiting the paddock. Hey, good to see the Casey's back. He's had some rough years, but we're glad he's back, and he was given an entire media session to talk about his feelings on the sport, which weren't always positive. Thoughts on the rule change, thoughts on what Casey Stoner has to say. I've got a thought, right?
Go on.
They have introduced stability control as a safety measure, and they could do this unilaterally without having to ask anybody, but you can't get rid of other things as a safety measure for the same reasons. That's very curious.
All the manufacturers agreed, but also this is not a hardware change. This is a software change. I have another theory. I have two theories this podcast. One you've already heard. And I may or may not have been gaslit into believing this more by another well-known MotoGP journalist who will remain nameless. I wonder if we just watched a Formula One 2001 moment.
Formula One 2001 moment. Now, explain for the listeners at home what the context is.
Well, going into the 2001 Spanish Grand Prix, the FIA makes a surprising announcement that it's open season on driving aids. Traction control, automatic gearboxes, launch control. Fuck it. Do what you want. This after a blanket ban on them at the end of 1993. Why was this? Well, because the FIA had evidence enough to go, well, we all know you're doing it, but we don't really have a way to police it right now, so we're going to allow it, just don't hurt yourselves with your new toys.
Yeah, because we can't single out the German kid at Benetton like we could like 6 or 7 years prior, allegedly.
Which that car did have launch control in the ECU. Traction control, okay. No. Launch control, yes. I'm wondering if the manufacturers were already playing in that pool and the MSMA and Dorna have gone, okay, we see you making LSD. How about you use ours instead? It's going to be safer.
And it's not the first time the sport has had a outside-the-book agreement with a third party that may or may not have been bending the current rules. Hello, Tire Pressures. How you doing?
Mm.
Just saying.
We're going to get some emails.
Yeah, anyway, and because they have total control of the electronics package in terms of the hardware, but the software is very much open season. Since the spec change in, what was it, 2016, we brought in the spec ECUs?
I think it was 16, yes.
And that was to cut out a lot of the insanity with the electronics where manufacturers did have full custom riding aid systems. This game has gone all the way back to 1992 when Honda designed a crankshaft with the sole purpose of making the bike easier to ride. And had McDoohan not shattered his leg, no, not that time, no, not that time, the first time, he probably wins every title using that from 1992 to 1998. Instead, he only won a few of them. Until he had his other career-ending incident. So, yeah. And for those who don't know, like, they do have what I would term vertical traction control already. That's been a thing. But this is more, I would say, side traction control, where this is designed that while the bike is sliding and it's on the edge of the tire, to measure that instead. To know when not to cut power, because the problem is, if you get the bike too sideways and it spins the tire up too much and it cuts the power, well, it cuts the power, unloads the bike, and sends you at the sky.
Exactly. There is probably some credence to the idea that, yes, having this system, if done effectively, probably can mitigate some of those high side crashes. And so, yes, there is some legitimacy to the whole "we brought this in on safety grounds" talk. But quite frankly, I'm in full agreement with RJ on this one. It is funny that they were able to come to an agreement on safety grounds to, you know, to have stability control like Gran Turismo 3 put on these bikes all of a sudden, while at the same time, everybody kind of knows the ride height devices are no longer worth the trouble, especially given now that everybody has them, and yet we still can't get those banned early.
And I'll tell you for free that the stability control in Gran Turismo 3, and especially 4, is not a performance-enhancing
item.
No, it is the sole reason why. It is the only reason why the licenses are hard in 4, is because you can't turn that shit off.
Yeah. It is a restrictor plate on your ability to gold those. But I digress.
Now, here's what Casey, for those, to add some full context, here's what Casey had to say, because Casey Stoner got a full-on media center session, and I'm not going to lie to you.
They knew exactly what they were doing.
They knew what they were doing, and because they know, look, for those who know Casey Stoner, he loves a good moan. Let's be frank. I like Casey, but he's always been very forthright in what he's had to say about the sport. And the media absolutely lapped this up like chum. Here's a part quote of what he had to say, and this was on the electronics in general. Quote, "It's always a very difficult, touchy subject because the riders are going to want it one way, and then the engineers and the manufacturers are going to want it another. So there's always this sort of argument, but as we're not creating street bikes out of these ones, I don't think we should be thinking about developing the electronics as far as they've gone. And especially now, this weekend, they've brought a whole nother level of electronics. Speaking to the riders, you can literally go and twist the throttle. You've got nearly 300 horsepower, and you could twist the throttle and nothing happens. You've got the best riders in the world riding the easiest bikes to ride in the world, and I don't see this as being anything that I'm interested in. You have no more control over how much slide you have. Already when I was testing, just before I stopped everything, I wasn't allowed to use the clutch going into the corner because it confused the system. So there's no more element of skill with every aspect. You literally have to brake hard, get it into the corner, and then all the guys are talking about now, they could just literally twist the throttle, press a button, drops it down. There's just too much going on." Now, what I would say is, it's probably worth finding the full thing. He goes into a lot more detail about how he hates the sprint format, shocker, and how he actually made a good point about how it's part of the reason why he thinks Marc Marquez is so good now, and how Danny Pedrosa was able to come back and still be a competitive wild card for KTM is because they have the extra experience of being able to control bikes without the electronic rider aids from their era of bike racing, especially Pedrosa, obviously, because he debuted in, 2006, he debuted.
Last year of the 990s.
Yeah, and Marquez debuted in 2013, only the second year of the prototypes. So, there's some interesting stuff there. And do not get me wrong, I do agree with an element of what Casey has to say.
Because we've all been saying that, like, some of the stuff, the aero, the ride height devices, jumped the shark a while ago.
Yeah, because, like, we forget the ride height devices, which now are used all the way around the lap, it started off as a form of mechanical launch control.
Yeah, it started off the line to basically make starts more consistent. It developed into, we can use this on every straight, can't we? And that's how it's become.
Out of every corner.
yeah.
no matter where it is. And the fact that the sport was unequipped to regulate effectively bikes breaking themselves in half to generate more traction and then snapping back into place, and the aero war, and the tire situation, and now the electronic situation. It's all a bit much. But at the same time, I love me some Casey Stoner. But if he had it his own way, we'd all still be riding two strokes with cradle frames and no fairings.
Yes, yes, yes. Cam Buckley hit the nail on the head that I was going to say. Casey, okay, for those who are newer bike fans who didn't see, like, first of all, I need to establish, Casey Stoner was your dad's favorite rider, not named Valentino. He was old school to a T, and he had maybe more raw pace than maybe any bike rider I have ever seen. Sometimes he would set purple sectors on his warm-up laps, because no one had more raw speed than him on the era of four-stroke bike that he was so good with. And a bit of the 990s as well, when, you know, and a bit of the 800s as well, because he did win a world title in 2011 with Honda.
Now, no, both of his on the 800s.
Oh, yeah, quite right. Yeah, because 07 was as well. Yeah, quite right. Thanks for correction. Yeah, look, Casey hated the bikes he rode to glory. He made it very vocal. It's part of the reason he retired in 2012 at just 27 years of age.
Yeah.
Well, the reason why he retired so soon was because he did not like the direction the sport was going in. He hated the four strokes. He hated the idea of prototype racing, which is where the direction the sport was going before he hung up the gloves entirely. And he would often wax lyrical about how if he wanted to ride a bike, he'd go back to the two-stroke days of the late 90s and early 2000s, where one wrong move and that bike will kill you. That's the era that Stoner loved. And he's talked in other interviews about how scared he was of riding a four-stroke, but that's also what made him so fast, because it forced him to have a lot of throttle control and management, because he was scared as to what a four-stroke could do at full potential. So you've got to understand that Casey is extremely old school.
Yeah.
His favorite era of bike racing was an era where he was too young to fully understand it at the time. So of course he's going to shit on these modern prototypes from a great height. That's who Casey is.
That's part of the game. I mean, Valentino, who described riding the first first four-stroke Honda in 02 as like riding a couch by comparison. Versus the last of the two-stroke NSR 500s. He said, I mean, he used to describe Stoner as, I mean, he's fast, but he's the first of the traction control generation, not realizing that Stoner hated the traction control.
So, naturally,
refused
when
to use it at times.
Yeah, so naturally, when Stoner is talking about the state of the sport, he's going to shit on what it, because he hated MotoGP in his prime. What do you think he thinks of MotoGP in 2025? Like, and what I don't understand about this is that every motherfucker that stood around that media press session knew that.
They held out the red rag. It's like, come here, and the bull ran right through it.
They knew exactly.
It's the F1 equivalent of putting a microphone in front of Helmut Marko about anything. You're gonna hear some shit.
You're holding up a tennis ball to your large breed dog, and that dog is getting excited, and you are just ready to throw that thing down the hallway.
Yeah, trust me, MotoGP is the definition of a boys' club when it comes to the people who cover it. And look, Matt Oxley put up a picture of Casey in that media scrum, and you can recognize all the big names that were around that desk. Oxley, Emmett, Patterson, Wheeler, Koronovsky. They were all there that weekend. They knew exactly what they were about to hear, and they pushed it out there because Casey dunking on modern day racing when the general sentiment of fans is that they're also mostly against this era of racing is like shooting fish in a barrel. Yeah. And I'm just like, and don't get me wrong, like I said, I agree with Casey on a good element of this. However, my God, we're so fucking predictable.
Everyone got their clicks. There's your free clicks for the week.
What's next? NASCAR inviting Mark Martin to have like 30 minutes with the media at the Nets Cup Series race to talk about his thoughts on the sport?
Are you kidding? NASCAR is absolutely fucking terrified of that, man. Along with anything, any idea that doesn't come from within their own walls.
As Ghost Raptor said in our own chat earlier, it's Nico Rosberg in F1 right now, because as I mentioned a couple of episodes ago, Nico Rosberg is a brilliant media personality because he knows he has nothing to lose. He's not a journalist. He has no obligation to have relationships with people inside teams internally. He doesn't have to worry about pissing another team off and their respective feelings. That's what allows Nico Rosberg to take the editorial clout that he does, because he's not a journo that fears if he says something bad about a Mercedes or a Ferrari, people inside might not want to talk to him no more.
It's what enables him to go and run up to Jos Verstappen and start poking the bear relentlessly.
Which, don't get me wrong, we love that shit, because Jos Verstappen's a dickhead. But another journo could not do that, because if you did that, there's a good chance Red Bull don't talk to you no more. That damages your credibility, it damages your ability to get scoops and stories, and hey, like many of my other peers in this industry, you might find yourself out of a job if it's not for the beloved click. This is representation of nothing. Just throwing that out there.
I was to say, like, the whole argument that everything is worse now than it was back in my day is, like, nothing new in motorsport. I remember coming up into Formula One where all the cars just a drove different themselves.
Flavor, right, RJ? It's just a different flavor of bring back the insert sports cars here. Bring back the V10s. Bring back the 950 horsepower. Bring back the COT. Thought you'd ever hear about that?
Wait, sorry. Bring back the V10s that had all these stupid mechanical aids and driver assist that basically made the cars drive themselves.
Well, don't talk about that part, otherwise you'll get nuh-uhs. Our version of bring back the V10s is bring back the two strokes.
Yeah, it really is, because they were proper racers by proper men, and
you're not a proper man unless you've lost at least two legs to your motorcycle while racing.
You're not a proper man until you've learned the right ratio of fuel and oil to just mix up in that cocktail.
The thing is that David Emmett wrote about that KC Media scrum, and he talked about how we revere the rider above all else. And I've said it on this show so many times. We're human beings. We will always be most captivated by human stories. And I said, I disagreed with David, because it's not a fair fight. An engineer's job is to make his bike go faster. Make his bike go as fast as possible. But for some reason, they're the bad guys. They're the killers of fun and joy, because heaven forbid they're doing their job properly. And unfortunately, the way we are as human beings, we will always thank the rider at the end of the story for bringing it home, and not the engineers and the hundreds of people that came together to make their vehicle happen in the first place. Gigi Deligna will never get the credit that Marc Marquez ultimately will when he wins this championship. And that sucks, to a degree, because Deligna is one of the great technical minds in MotoGP history. What he has done to turn Ducati around is nothing short of seismic in terms of what they were as a manufacturer and what they are now. Unfortunately, we as sports fans will always love the squishy bit more than the engineering part. And that, to a degree, is just a little bit unfair, and I've always tried to thrash the point that it's a balance, and it should be a balance. Yes, the rider or the driver is always going to be the most important piece, because they are the ones that will ultimately be able to make a difference, the final difference. But
the sport is that motorsport is in that very unique position where it is just as much of an engineering championship as it is a sporting championship, no matter what you're allowed to engineer, no matter what level of freedom you are given.
And unfortunately, the fleshy bit will always win out over the bolts and over the bolts and the brains.
We've seen World Athletic go berserk in the last couple of years with all the super shoes.
Yeah.
Where we now have technical regulations on marathon shoes.
Yeah, because the shoes are now, as some people have worked out, 2-3% faster than what they were 10 years ago. Do you know how crazy it is to shave 2% off a marathon run? Like,
that's a lot of time.
It's minutes. It's minutes we're shaving off because, again, technology has come a long way and developed it, and now we can see someone like Eliud Kipchoge run a marathon in closed conditions in under 2 hours, which is ridiculous. You know, and a lot of that is down to shoes. A lot of that is down to the technology that we don't want to champion because the human bit's the most important bit, and I don't think that's fair. And I've always said I don't think that's fair.
Human element is the most important, unless you have an agenda against that human element. And that Absolutely. Is all the engineer's credit.
Yeah, and one more note. If you ever see Matt Oxley's post about that Casey Stoner media scrum, when you spot the person of color in that press conference, do reach out to me at DreHarrison101 on Instagram and see where they are, because I promise you, you will not find them.
There it is.
It's a fun question to walk away from.
There's the walk-off.
Why is there no people of color covering this goddamn sport? Something to think about as we head to Balaton Park next weekend for the first Hungarian Grand Prix in quite a while. Balaton Park, I'm not holding out much hope for this one after seeing what they were doing on World Superbikes, but hey, maybe I'll be in for a surprise.
Well, what was it, the two Honda World Superbike riders going? Yeah, the bike felt fantastic.
Ow, so
what do you think about? What do you think about the track? Yeah, the bike was awesome.
You know, you've seen it all when Ducati had a test session on Panigale's around that track, and Pecco Bagnaia and Marc Marquez could only say, and I quote, it's a different layout. I think that kind of says it all. Mm. We'll report back with our findings next week on Motorsport 101. We will also have our penultimate round of the IndyCar Series Championship. Not much left to talk about besides Alex Palou maybe chasing history. It's the Milwaukee Mile. And Cameron Buckley will be there in person. You lucky bastard.
I'm flying out tomorrow morning and I'm going to go get me some Mug and Bun root beer. Going to go hang out with some Porsches, some newly minted Porsches in the IMS Museum. There's an RS Spider in there. And let me tell you, I am there.
He's going to drink his body weight in root beer, and I'm going to be immensely jealous of him. So next week will be two episodes, IndyCar at the Milwaukee Mile and MotoGP at Balaton Park. We'll be back then. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison, they've been Cameron Buckley and RJ O'Connor. Thank you very much for listening or watching, and we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
RJ knows. RJ knows what that root beer is like.
It's true.